Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
It's another Sunday edition of the Yahoo Sports Hockey Podcast. Justin Cuthbert and Julian McKenzie. Julian, what is going on, man?
Life is good, man. We're just finished the second week of the NHL regular season, and people are still overreacting, and teams are undefeated, and a lot of really interesting storylines to delve through on this Sunday morning.
I mean, it's only getting hotter and hotter. Like, it's getting colder outside, like a little frost on the window this morning for me, but like the fans or the flames from Leaf Nation are fanning from outside my window here. It is as hot as it could possibly be in Toronto, and I assume that maybe things cooled off a little bit in Montreal after that offensive explosion on Saturday, or are things still pretty hot there as well?
So definitely fans have, I mean, the flames have been kind of dying down just a little bit. I think if you're a Canadiens fan, especially if you're a Quebecer, Saturday night couldn't have gone any better. Not only do you get your first win of the season, but Drummondville native Mathieu Perrault gets a hat trick. And it's already the best moment of the season for the Canadiens so far. So yeah, I think they're able to have a day where they could just kind of forget the fact that they're still last place in the division and just kind of think about the fact that they were able to score goals for once. A lot of difference makers in that game.
And it might make things a little bit sweeter because some of the attention that was on Montreal is now going to be on Toronto after what was a pretty devastating loss in Pittsburgh, a 48-hour stretch that was very, very forgettable. Although I don't think anyone's going to let us forget about what happened over the last two nights in Leafland. So let's get to it. Let's get to their start. Let's get to the last 48 hours. Two wins from six to start for this Leaf team. Obviously, there was a lot of expectations, so that is not good enough. But some surprising things, like Austin Matthews and Mitch Marner, zero goals combined. I know Matthews has only played three games, and he's coming off an injured wrist and a surgical intervention with his wrist, but still a little surprising. They're combined for just 1 point. And now after a game that they should have won versus the New York Rangers early in the week, and then a competitive but disappointing loss to San Jose on Friday, and then this disaster on Saturday, it's gone from 0 to 100 in a flash, and all of a sudden the sky is falling with the Maple Leafs. So give me your view from your perch in Montreal of what's going on with this team, and then I'll give you my perspective.
I'm sorry, but I look at that scoreline. I was watching, obviously, I was at the Canadiens game, and I was trying to follow on Twitter what was going on with Pittsburgh and Toronto. And every time I kept seeing an update, I just couldn't believe it. And if I'm totally distant from this, I can't imagine how a Leafs fan like Tic-Tac Tomar might be feeling right now. It's
We'll find out
on In Dimensions, but it's downright unacceptable. And at first, you know, I thought, you know what, everything that had been going on up until Saturday, it's early in the season. I don't think we're at a point where we should be seeing Leafs fans throwing jerseys onto the ice, but losing as bad as they did to a team without Sidney Crosby, Evgeny Malkin, Brian Rust, Jeff Carter, who tested positive for COVID. I know Tristan Jarry was in COVID protocol, but it looked as if he was able to play. Chris Letang was also unavailable to this team too. Like, how do the Leafs lose a game that badly? Like, that blows my mind. I get it. There's games where you've seen it before in the National Hockey League where guys might not have their best players. They play above what they're supposed to, and they somehow get a result out of it. But to lose 7-1, that's unacceptable considering this regular season is supposed to not essentially be a breeze, but that's not supposed to be the issue with this Toronto Maple Leafs team. There are going to be bad games over the course of a regular season. It happens. But game six already, you have a stinker of a loss like that. That should be well below the standard expected for the Toronto Maple Leafs. And I'll add this, like, when you consider the fact that they endured what they endured last year with the Canadians, coming back from 3-1, the Columbus Blue Jackets series in the play-in, the Zamboni driver, the losses to Boston in the first round. You know, when you get to a point where you endure enough crap and enough bad thing after bad thing, you can understand why the fans are jaded and are just naturally pessimistic about this team. And unless the Leafs essentially win around, it's not going to change. It's kind of a really, the Leafs, I feel as if they're in this weird pressure. They're in this kind of almost no win situation. They could have a bang on regular season and no one is really going to care about it. But they have losses like this. Of course, everyone is going to lose their mind, because at the end of the day, you can't keep being this lovable loser that can't get past the first round or have these losses to teams you should be demolishing. Like, after a while, you get too jaded over this stuff. Like, it's a bit ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean, I think most regular season games are really meaningless. I mean, we pay a lot of attention to these. We write about all of them. We give, you know, snap judgments. We overreact everything. You know, this is why we like sports, so we can, you know, overreact and live in the moment. But really, each of these individual games, pretty much 98% of the time, means nothing. It's what happens over the balance of the season. It's progression from certain players and teams. That's what really matters. And then we see what happens in the playoffs after the full story is written on a team. But every now and then, one game allows you to look under the hood. The happenings of one game gives you that chance to see what really might be happening behind the scenes. Now, I don't know if anything bad is happening behind the scenes. I don't know if there's dysfunction at any real level. I don't know if they're not playing for Sheldon Keefe. I don't know if they're not playing for each other. But something wasn't right in that Pittsburgh loss. Obviously, a terrible loss. It ended up being 7-1, which was, interestingly, worse than it was 2 years ago when it was 6-1, and that seemed like the last time we saw under the hood, and about 72 hours later, Mike Babcock was being fired in Vegas. Now, it's easy to connect those two because it's the same team, same result, but it does sort of point to the same issues, or an issue, which is that something seems to be wrong. Something about this team is broken. And it might just be that they're fragile, and they're fragile because of all those postseason losses, and they're fragile because they're not mentally tough as a team and as certain individuals. But we saw that something was wrong, I think, on Saturday night, and something probably has to change in order to avoid getting the same fate from happening when it matters most. Again, we're going to have more meaningless games coming up. Leafs are probably going to win a lot of them. They're probably going to get into the playoffs. And then this mental toughness, or this... this idea of team is going to be tested again, and then we might just have the exact same result. I feel like we got a window into the Maple Leafs, one we didn't get with this all or nothing at all, because it really didn't show anything. But when you lose that way and you don't fight for each other and you let it get to the point that it got, it feels like there's something fatally wrong with this team, and that has been proven over many years now.
Is this like the closest we're seeing to those demons? Well, not the closest we've seen to those demons, but we saw those so-called demons that Paul McLean mentioned in the All or Nothing documentary. In fact, if anything, the most revealing thing from that documentary is the fact that a guy like Paul McLean, while not necessarily behind the bench, is able to spot that the Leafs have them in their beds, have them in their cars, in their homes, wherever. Fuck, 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 all the swearing you could put. It's just, it's not ideal, man. And yeah, I'm really buying into the fact that they're not, the fact that they are mentally fragile. And if you endure all the crap they've endured over the last few years, but somehow still have not found a way to get back from it, you're going to have performances like this. And I don't know if this is going to go well over the course of the season for these guys. They may end up having a really good regular season, but if it doesn't matter at the end, it doesn't matter at the end if it means that, you know, the first round of the playoffs, just, you know, the same result happens. It's literally a no-win situation for these guys.
Oh, you're definitely right about the no-win situation. I mean, these guys cannot really escape it because they can't prove anything over the next, we're six games in, so 76 games. They cannot prove a single thing other than the negative. They can only prove that they're a dysfunctional team and that changes need to be made. That's all they can really accomplish. Of course, that's not really accomplishing anything. You mentioned demons. I mean, they have a headquarters in Pittsburgh, it seems, because that seems to be a house of horrors for the Maple Leafs. They always seem to run into a rock bottom scenario when they visit there. Obviously, it's been a few years, but their last visit, I believe, was one of the most consequential moments in this current history of the Maple Leafs. I do believe the mental issues with the Leafs is like the biggest story of this season. And Mitch Marner is the poster child for that. And that's going to continue. And I was on the Zoom call and I tweeted out that his first words out of the scrum was that I don't think we can be too concerned. And that blew up. I'm still getting notifications like crazy because Leaf fans are not happy with the apathy that seems to be creeping into this team. And I feel like they're trying to say it's not a big deal because it's really not. Again, it's game six. It's not a big deal. But you can keep telling yourself that. But at some point, these things, these moments mean something. They add up. And they show that underlying issue that seems to be haunting this team, which is that they are a fragile group. And that fragility showed when you can't stop the bleeding against a team like the Pittsburgh Penguins without their five best players and a, you know, a full line that could be, you know, a number one power play or whatever, like a bunch of all-stars past and present, not in the lineup, and you can't stop the bleeding. That shows me that there's something wrong. And I think a lot of it begins, honestly, with Mitch Marner, because he is the poster child, again, of this, you know, trying to cover over something with a Band-Aid that really can't be covered with a Band-Aid. You need stitches. And it's quite evident, honestly.
There are some Leaf fans who would argue you need a full lobotomy. I also imagine that enough Toronto Maple Leafs fans have grown up watching Charlie Brown and Peanuts, and they've seen Charlie Brown run up for the kick with the ball being held by Lucy, and then Lucy pulls the football back, and then Charlie Brown just falls over. They've seen that enough times, and the Leafs fans are tired of being Charlie Brown, having the wool pulled over their eyes and the ball being pulled back. So to hear that being coming from Mitch Marner, yeah, I'd be livid too if I was a Toronto Maple Leafs fan. They've seen this over and over and over. And right now there's no confidence in a lot of fans that they could eventually get over this. I don't blame them for being upset after that Pittsburgh loss. And I don't blame them from hearing stuff from, whether it's from a Jake Muzzin, whether he said, I know he said like last night's performance was inexcusable, or even hearing something from Marner, like it's going to go over so many people's heads. Like it doesn't matter. Like you, after a loss like that, it's just so revealing of how this team is just inept at having these key performances. It's beyond ridiculous now. Like the Leafs need to do something. I don't know how you go through the rest of this season and continue to run it back with these same guys and just expect something is going to be different. Isn't the definition of insanity doing the same thing over and over and expecting a different result? At this point, the Leafs have to do something at some point. I'm still going to hold on to this. They are one bad losing streak, I think, from everything hitting the fan and everybody losing their minds. This is bad enough. Imagine if the Leafs lose like three more games like this. You go on like a 5 or 6 game losing streak. This could get even worse. Something will have to happen.
Yeah, I mean, this, we could be in the midst of that, honestly, with the way this is going. They have to turn it around, and next up, they got another demon in Freddie Anderson playing the lights out in Carolina. Like, it's not going to get any easier in the immediate term. You mentioned the definition of insanity. For my money, the definition of insanity is continuing to employ Michael Hutchinson as your third goaltender. We're talking about fragility, and that's a big thing. Like, putting him into games when you need to show something, and immediately he's letting in goals when he came in the third period for Jack Campbell. Like that just, I would have left Jack Campbell in just because you need to at least salvage something out of that game. Like, can we win the third period and get some momentum? But no, immediately Michael Hutchinson comes in and gives up a goal. Like that, he's just, the leash has got to be snapped with Hutchinson. Like, it's just gone on for far too long. I mean, the mental fragility, I think, is sort of, we're talking in theory, like we believe that is the case, but there's actual real life hockey issues with this team. The scoring woes are there. Mitch Marner and Austin Matthews with a combined 1 point through 9 games total. The defensive issues, Justin Hall and Jake Muzzin, have been absolutely atrocious to start. Really, there's only been one overperforming, if you want to say that, defenseman, and that's been Rasmus Sandin. Everybody else is struggling. And as good as Jack Campbell's been for the most part, he was terrible against Pittsburgh, and the goaltending problems are there as well. This is a team that is just constantly dunking on itself. I mean, the loss was bad enough as it is, but there was a bunch of controversy on Friday night about moving the game up from 7 to 6 p.m. because apparently it was either about getting through customs for the first time. But what I think a lot of people believe is that sports science basically stepped in and said, hey, that extra hour, that could benefit you on the second half of a back-to-back. So that's in everybody's head that, okay, they're doing this because they think they have a competitive advantage. And not only do they lose in San Jose in that 6 o'clock game, but they don't even show up in Pittsburgh. Like, sports science, if that was really the thing, like, how about worrying about just performing on the ice? Because that was an embarrassment. And that's truly the case. That is the most embarrassing thing of anything that's happened for the Leafs this season.
Are you serious? That's sports science thing? That's actually
legit?
Well,
no one's really like confirmed it. No one's given like a real reason why they did it. That's We've incredible. Heard kind of rumors about whether it was getting out of the city or they just thought, hey, this could help us recover for the next day. And I don't doubt that's a thing because like there's an arrogance in this industry with everyone, media, teams, everyone has to be arrogant to a certain degree because if you're not arrogant, then you don't believe that you can do the job better than someone. And I think the Leafs believe in their heart of hearts, and they should, that they can do this job better than other teams. I think we hear that all the time. They're doing this, they're doing that. They're a superior franchise in every aspect. And I believe this comes into it. There's an arrogance here to believe, hey, we're going to do things better. We're going to play an hour earlier because we know it's going to benefit us on the next night. And then that happens. I mean, that's the sort of stuff that gets laughed at. And the Leafs are being laughed at right now.
I'll just say this. Like, I'm with you on the fact that athletes have to have that sort of mentality in order to power themselves through. So that way they can ensure they perform at their peak ability and help them, you know, win games. Yeah, good luck with being arrogant and being on the Toronto Maple Leafs. I'm sorry. Like, I don't feel you've had any reason over the last how many years to puff out your chest for anything. That's just the way I see it.
No, it's been proven. And there are more and more people who are converting away from, you know, worshiping at the Bible or at the altar for this team and this management team. I mean, we're seeing less and less and less of it. There is more apathy. There is more anger than really I've ever seen in my lifetime.
It's deserved.
And it is against this team. This team, the one that was supposed to lead this franchise out of the darkness, is only, you know, finding its way into, you know, a further pitch black scenario. It's really, really ugly right now. And I'll just add this last thing. They've got to get to it real quick. Go ahead.
I'll just add this last thing. If the Toronto Maple Leafs lost like 4-3 or like a more respectable scoreline to the Pittsburgh Penguins, I would say that a lot of what's going on is still an overreaction because at least if they're being competitive in games, fine, they'll figure this out and they'll get through it. 7-1 against a team that lost, that did not have many of its stars available, is enough to get the, you know, panic button and to just tap it repeatedly. It is unacceptable. It is inexcusable. And Toronto Maple Leafs fans should be downright disgusted with what they're seeing with this team because it's absolutely ridiculous.
And no coincidence that Jason Spezza was the only one to score in that game 2 years ago or almost 2 years ago and the only one to score in this game. He's the guy who doesn't seem to fall into this trap while everybody else falls into it. He's the one that just continues to perform. And it's been like that from the start of the season. He's been the only consistent player on this team while everybody else is underperforming even beyond the team. Management, coaching, everybody is underperforming in this organization right now. And I don't know if there's any way you can deny that. Now, Julian, let's get off the Leafs.
Yes.
You were in the building wearing a suit for Jesperi Kotkaniemi's return to Montreal. Not a great night in Montreal, but again, they followed that up with a better story that they wrote on Saturday night. But I want you to tell me about the atmosphere there. Obviously, there was some anger in the fan base at Jesperi Kotkaniemi. There was some trolling by the Hurricanes social media team. And there was just, you know, a richer player returning to a rink that he's familiar with and scoring a goal. So tell me about that night and sort of the fallout and where we stand now and how both franchises are going to move forward here.
Man, like, I wasn't there when PK Subban came back, so I don't know how loud those boos were. But for the amount of times I've been at the Bell Center, that's the loudest I've ever heard fans boo at anybody, as far as I'm concerned, when it came to Jesperi Kotkaniemi. Even if the puck was in his vicinity, the fans were making themselves heard and being extremely vocal. And considering the way the team was looking at that point, they had yet to win a game. obviously. And then they end up pulling off that stinker where they, I mean, fine, they were relatively competitive for the most part. But not only does Jesperi Kotkaniemi score in that game, he pretty much scores the dagger, which puts the Canadians out of that game off a redirect in the slot, essentially, past Jake Allen. And at that point, you're seeing Jesperi Kotkaniemi just, you know, happy with the goal and everything. Yeah, if you're a Canadiens fan in the building that night, like you're feeling a little bit sick to your stomach. But the Canadiens also played up to the fact that Jesperi Kotkaniemi was in the building. Like, I think after one of his first shifts, they showed him on the Jumbotron and everyone just kept piling on and booing him. No video tribute, none of that. Like, everyone just went in and booed him. And you know what? I'm sure if many of those 21,000 fans were tendered some contract offer for $6.1 million to work somewhere else for some other rival company, I'm sure that a good chunk of them would do the same. But I just look, Jesperi Kotkaniemi did what he did. It's no secret that the way he was handled in Montreal could have been way better than what the Canadians ended up doing. And frankly, I don't blame Jesperi Kotkaniemi for signing that offer sheet. This is a guy who can now be in a situation in Carolina where he's not going to be asked about his contract that much. I think he even told The Athletic he got asked about his contract like once. Like, I think like one of the first days he was in Carolina, and he hasn't been asked about it since. I'm sure all the media appearances and availabilities he did in light of the...
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. United Healthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
He did ahead of the Montreal game. That might be the most he gets for any game this year. I think so. This is a guy who, you know, he did his thing on Thursday night. And the Canadians at that point, it's pretty much rock bottom for them for the way that this season has gone. I still think with the pieces that they have, there's no reason why they should have had the start that they had. And Jesperi Kotkaniemi essentially just kind of added insult to injury by scoring on Thursday night. It was, if they lost to Detroit, I think we'd be talking about a really dire situation here. I don't know if anyone would be throwing jerseys like they're doing in Toronto, but 0-6 is not a good place to be in ahead of a West Coast road trip that puts you through all the California teams as well as Seattle. But at least they have the win in Detroit that they could use that as momentum to guard themselves forward.
So I didn't see the entire media availability with Kotkaniemi, but he seems unfazed by all this, which I find myself impressed by. Do you get the same sort of feeling from him? And now that he's finished his, you know, that one return, that homecoming to Montreal, gotten through it, obviously it wasn't the most comfortable thing, but it didn't seem to bother him that much. And now I think he can move forward, even though it wasn't really a big issue, I guess it seems to him. It looks like a guy who made the right decision, honestly, and is comfortable with it. Do you see the same thing?
Yeah, I feel like ahead of the game, he was really just trying to do his best to kind of move on and just kind of show that he's, you know, happier in his situation in Carolina. I'm sure after the fact, he was probably feeling pretty happy considering the fact that he scores in his return and his team wins, which ultimately is the biggest thing that a player wants. But yeah, I get the sense this is a guy who, you know, he's grateful for his time in Montreal. Obviously, they gave him an opportunity to play. He participated in those playoff runs in the bubble as well as the Stanley Cup final run. And he played key moments in both of those runs. But those days are done now. He's a Carolina Hurricane, and the Carolina Hurricanes are going to run up the score on that whenever they can. I got to shout out their social media team because they absolutely hammed it up and they played that to perfection. The I don't know if you saw the URL, did the Habs lose after the fact?
Oh yeah.
That was really good.
Are you cool with that? You think it's good?
I think it's hilarious. I think it's fun. Like it's. I mean, the Carolina Hurricanes do not have the history that the Montreal Canadiens have, obviously. But you know, while some people kind of look at it and they think, "Oh, there's some kind of campy way for them to kind of try to punch up at one of the premier franchises of the National Hockey League," I kind of look at it from the opposite. Like they have nothing to lose by doing this. It's something that's just fun. It gets other people from the NHL looking at them and seeing that, you know, they are the bunch of jerks as they quoted themselves to being. Like, I think it's a fun thing. It's cool. They got the upper hand. They've been getting the upper hand through the offer sheet and this, like, play it up. And I don't know what'll happen if the Montreal Canadiens get a big win over them later in the future. Maybe the Canadiens are just stoic with it on social media. Maybe they say, ha ha, we finally got you back or something. But, and I don't even know if we can even call this like a playful rivalry, because Montreal doesn't necessarily, like, they don't get into the antics the same way that Carolina does. But it is still entertaining. I'm all for fun and entertainment and chaos whenever we can get chaos, organized chaos, of course. You don't want anything too crazy. But yeah, this was fun. This was something that I thought was pretty funny to see. And I think people who lose their minds over this should just lighten up. It's just social, it's just a random social media account. Like, it's not going to change your life.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's something, I don't know if it's endearing or charming, but I just kind of like the fact that the Carolina Hurricanes, who have no business living rent-free in the heads of a fan base like the Montreal Canadiens, are, like, just because of a social media account. It is actually pretty funny that they're, like, just standing up to this, you know, the most storied franchise in the entire NHL and just kind of owning them in that regard, on the ice and off the ice right now. I kind of think it's funny that they're just trying, they basically created a rival out of the Montreal Canadiens who would never really be a rival for them just because of what's going on. I think it's kind of fun at the time. There's a lot of bad social media accounts in the NHL. I mean, the Vegas Golden Knights media account is probably the most embarrassing thing in sports, honestly. Like, it's so bad. It's just, oh, I hate it so much. It's Seattle's bad. Not that much better in their start. Honestly, I don't think they're very good either. There's a lot of bad accounts. And Carolina is, you know, everyone's trying to play that game, but Seattle or Carolina plays that game way better than everybody else. It's just 1, 2, 3 steps ahead at all times. And it's not just like corny, lame commentary. It's actually thoughtful. And for that reason, I got to give them a little bit of respect for sure.
It's fun. The sports are supposed to be fun. You know, that's just the way that I see it. I know the Canadiens are 1-5, but, you know, sports are supposed to be fun. And that night, the Carolina Hurricanes had every right to have fun with what was going on. That's the way I see it. It's not the end of the world. You can go on and live your lives. There are way more important things. Don't lose your mind over the Carolina Hurricanes being a bunch of jerks.
There are options. Mute, block. You can do whatever you wish. We do whatever you wish. Seems like the Oilers and Panthers are doing anything that they wish at this moment right now. The Oilers and Panthers are both 5-0. The Oilers are just chilling in Vegas this weekend, which is pretty awesome after winning back-to-back on the road and getting, I think, 5 days off between games. They're just going to be at, like, a pool watching football today, which is something they honestly deserve after their tremendous start. And the Florida Panthers are in that boat as well. They're both tied for the NHL's best record at 5-0. And they both really, really impressed. Do you want to start with the Oilers? Like,
yeah,
might as well. McDavid and Draisaitl, they just seem to be on another level right now. Like, Connor McDavid, we know he's the best player in the world. We've known that for a long time. People were trying to make Nathan MacKinnon the best player in the world a couple years ago, but we kind of realized that McDavid is far and away. And I think he's honestly in a class of his own right now. I don't even think, like, you know, we could talk about the best players, but there's got to be at least like a pretty sizable buffer zone between McDavid and everybody else. He's just at that level. And in that next year, Leon Draisaitl is right there. These guys are absolutely unbelievable, and they're leading what is a revamped forward group with Zach Hyman, who, by the way, has more goals than Tavares, Matthews, Marner, and Nylander combined at this point in the season with 5 already. They are firing on all cylinders. They are 5-0. What are you seeing from the Oilers in the early going of the season?
That the Toronto Maple Leafs should have done everything they could to keep Zach Hyman, for one. Two, Connor McDavid's essentially battling with himself here. I'm with you on that. I don't think there's anyone who's within like 2 meters or within, you know, 20 meters of Connor McDavid in terms of who's the best player in the world. Nathan MacKinnon, I think he's a really great player. He's not on the same level as Connor McDavid. He's not a guy who's going to be able to generate as many points as Connor McDavid's been able to do over the first few games of this season. And the biggest takeaway from this is that he's not playing around this year. We all know what the expectations are for the Edmonton Oilers. We've talked about it on this show and on Zone Time as well, about how it's important for the Edmonton Oilers not to waste what they have in Connor McDavid. And they need to take advantage of the fact that they have this generational talent and build the best possible team around him so they could get an opportunity at competing for Stanley Cup championships. And I know it's really early in the season, but this is a really great start for the Edmonton Oilers. And it's something that they should be, you know, happy about, and they should try to build upon in order to put themselves in a great position to compete for a Stanley Cup championship later this year. But I think this year, with the way that Connor McDavid is going, he's obviously the early front runner for MVP. He might be able to get himself another one if he continues to keep this up here. And hey, maybe we see something incredible in terms of his goals and point totals this year. I just think the fact that he's just been this incredible player, continuing to turn up year in, year out. This is a guy who's all about hockey. This guy's serious. And I think if the forward core that they've got going on right now continues to play up to their potential, we could be talking about this Edmonton Oilers team as a true playoff contender this year. And we'll all look dumb maybe for dumping on the moves they did in the offseason, including the acquisition of one Duncan Keith. Yeah, I would be totally happy being proven wrong about the Edmonton Oilers if it means Connor McDavid gets some kind of Stanley Cup success.
I think this is as good as they've looked. And it is in part because of those offseason moves. I think at every sort of turn they've improved, even with Connor McDavid. I mean, I think he's on the path to sweeping. You mentioned, you know, potentially getting another Hart Trophy. I think he could win every award this year that really matters to an elite player. Like I think he should be considered the Rocket Richard favorite. He's got a 7-goal lead on Matthews already. We're only 5 games into the season, but he's not going to stop scoring. Let's be honest. This is going to continue. I think in every way, at every turn, they're better, as I mentioned. And I think that includes Connor McDavid, in that we always knew he was always this, like, unbelievable, best player on the ice, most talented, like, just incredible how good he was. But there was an element of him being a little bit out of control. Like, everything was happening. He was operating at a different speed, and everything he was doing was different. But it was almost like he was moving too fast at some points. Now he looks like in total control on the ice and of every shift in which he's on the ice. And that's a huge, huge thing, that even he's getting better. But it's all about the entire team getting better. You mentioned Zach Hyman. There was a hole in the top six, and he's filled that hole. And now they're a lot better. Derek Ryan coming and playing bottom 6 minutes. Like, he's a guy that does the things that Oiler forwards have never done before, which is just get them from one McDavid shift to the other without bad things happening. And we were all over the defense, Duncan Keith and Cody Ceci. But guess what happened? Evan Bouchard, we didn't talk about at all.
We didn't.
He's moved up, and now he's playing major defensive minutes with Darnell Nurse. You don't have to worry about Duncan Keith and Cody Ceci if Evan Bouchard, who was taken in the top 10 in the NHL draft a couple years ago, comes up, steps up, and fills that pedigree that he has and keeps Duncan Keith and Cody Ceci on the bench in key moments. This team is one with Koskinen in relief, Koskinen on the second night in a back-to-back in Vegas. Like, things just seem different with Edmonton right now.
Look, if they're able to keep this up, that's good for them. And yeah, we have not talked about Evan Bouchard, who the Oilers have, like, really touted, and a lot of Oilers fans as well have really highly touted this player. And the fact that he's been able to be pressed into those minutes, that's really good for him and good for the Oilers, it seems like. So things are starting really well for the Edmonton Oilers. They better not mess this up. They better not mess this up. And I'm with you on the fact that Connor McDavid, I'm not going to be surprised if we see him compete for every other major award. I would love to see it. In fact, like, have himself the most dominant season we've seen from an NHL player in a very long time. I mean, hey, the fact he was able to get 100 points in 50 something odd games last year was just a taste of what we were able to get. Imagine if he played a full 82. Let's see him try to be as dominant as we've ever seen him this season. I'm all here for it. Like, the Edmonton Oilers, they're already, like, a fun team because they have Connor McDavid. The fact that they could be seen as, I mean, I know Vegas is kind of stumbling out of the gate here, but imagine if the Edmonton Oilers are good enough to win that division. Like, that's a
I think they are. I honestly think they are going to win the division now. I think there's some concern in Vegas with a lot of their key players being out, Mark Stone being out potentially for a while. Like, it's a big issue. And then, as we've seen before in the NHL, you get a lead, it's easier to hold on to it than make up ground. We know that for sure. Oh, yeah. As good as the Oilers are, though, I think the Florida Panthers are the best team in the NHL right now. They are 5-0, but their strength of schedule, much stronger. They beat nothing but good teams, it seems, so far. And I don't want to say they made it look easy, but they've done it in a way that would suggest that they're pretty prime for a successful postseason run. keeping pucks out of their own net. Sergei Bobrovsky looks like he's having a renaissance season. He used to be like every other. Maybe there's a couple in between, but since his last good season. But it's possible he can bounce back and have a major, major year. And if even he stumbles, they got Spencer Knight back there who could step up. And we talked to a first-round pedigree with Bouchard, first-round pedigree with Spencer Knight. I think Florida is certainly off and running and probably the NHL's best team at this point.
I look really good right now for saying that they were going to win the division, but I did not think they were necessarily going to be the league's best team. But they have the pieces to do it. Good coaching, good forward. Sam Bennett has continued to look really strong since moving from Calgary to Florida. He's turned himself into a completely different player. Sam Reinhart's looking to pick his game back up. Jonathan Huberdeau got himself a 2-goal game the other night. He's doing really well. But yeah, I think Sergei Bobrovsky playing well is the biggest key in all of this because we knew they had the forwards up front. We knew they had the coaching, but their goaltending had to be solid, whether it's going to be Sergei Bobrovsky taking the lion's share of minutes or whether the Florida Panthers are going to say, hey, you know what? We need to get Spencer Knight a little bit more involved. The goaltending had to be sharp in order for them to be in a good position to make the playoffs, win the division, and even go on a run. And I know it's only the first few games of the year, but it's looking really good for Sergei Bobrovsky right now. He's had to be the big major key, and he's looked like it so far. But yeah, I was all in on the Florida Panthers from before the season started. And if the Florida Panthers prove me right, I will let everybody know I was all in on the Florida Panthers. I will definitely puff my chest out on that one when it comes time.
I was all in as well, and I have a division winner bet to prove it that I'm hoping to cash at the end of the season. Florida 5-0, as I mentioned. Obviously, that is 10 points, 22 goals for, 9 against. That's a goal differential of plus 13. They are 5 points up already on the teams that we expect to be in the playoffs. I mean, Sabres and Red Wings are 2-3 in the division right now, but they are 5 points up already on the Leafs and Lightning. The Leafs have played one more game than the Panthers, so they've already created a little buffer zone as they look to win their first division title, I think, maybe in some time, maybe ever. I'm actually not sure if the Panthers have ever brought home a division title, but certainly this is one of the best Panthers teams ever, and I think we're going to be talking about them a lot throughout the course of the season. Another first, another team we're going to be talking about throughout the course of the season, Seattle Kraken. We talked about, you know, first impressions last week, but they didn't have a home game through the first week and a half of the season, but they had their first ever home game at Climate Pledge Arena, which I might call Climate Change Arena, like John Shorthouse last night. But that's okay, because it's a bit hard to say Climate Pledge Arena, but it's a good, you know, it's good that they're, you know, energy,
you know, I still renewable, think it should have been called the Sound stuff. Garden. It should have been called the Sound Garden. Like, how are you in Seattle?
I love that.
And you have the whole grunge scene and Nirvana and all that, and you don't call it the Sound Garden. Even not even like anecdotally, like, you know, like some stadiums get like nicknames or whatever. It should just like Climate Sound Garden. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's right there. Climate.
Yeah, I mean, the Sound Garden presented by Climate Pledge. Like, so you could do something like that. I mean, I think it's a good thing that they're not like just the Amazon Arena, which they could be. Like, they're trying to, you know,
or the Starbucks Center.
It could be that as well. They're trying to do something good with their arena, and they are doing good things apparently inside the arena with using like rainwater for their ice and all that stuff. Like, they're actually living by their pledge, I guess. Anyway, it's a beautiful arena. It's the closest thing probably to like SoFi Stadium or AT&T, I believe, in Dallas, where it's like a little bit different. There's a little bit more to look at. There's like a big window at one end, and it's actually like underground, which is pretty cool as well. But they opened that new arena. It cost a lot of money. It was worth it because it looked incredible on TV. First impressions seeing it last night?
From what I was able to see on Twitter, like, it looks as if they were trying to put on quite the presentation. And we think about how the Vegas Golden Knights, they pretty much kind of changed the bar for expansion teams. I saw some people kind of put their comments up. They're like, yeah, well, you know, it wasn't like Vegas or anything like that. But I think the Seattle Kraken, from what I was able to see, they looked as if they did a pretty bang on job with the way that they were, you know, going about their intros and stuff. But I don't understand why they retired a number. Why did they retire 32? I don't know why that was necessary at all. That was
so.
I don't know about that.
It's a Seattle thing. I think they retired number 12 with the Seahawks because it's the 12th man is the I guess the fan base, right? The 12th man inside their stadium. I guess it means something to Seattle to do that. They sold 32,000 season tickets or 32,000. packages, I guess, when they released the franchise, when they were starting to get, you know, money to actually pay the expansion fee. So I guess there's something there, and they're the 32nd franchise. So I guess they're, you know, they're diving into the, or they're leaning in heavily into that Seattle sports culture. I don't really have an opinion either way. I don't know if that's, it really matters all that much, but sort of like this Carolina Hurricanes social team, just, okay, that's, if you don't like it, just, you don't have to put it out on Twitter. I don't think it's that big of a deal. But if it means something to that team, and evidently it seems like the team does mean something to those fans and those people in Seattle, because they were right into that opening game, did not stay up to watch the third period. I guess they collapsed and lost against Vancouver. But you know, it looked like a very exciting night in Seattle for sure. And it looks pretty obvious that Seattle and the Seattle Kraken are going to be a massive success.
Yeah. In terms of the team though, I mean, a bit of a 1-4-1 start for them. I still think they could at least try to compete for a playoff spot, but that might also change with the way some of the other teams look in this division as well. But as long as they're able to compete, that's what really matters with this team going forward. Honestly, that I hope that they're able to kind of, you know, build themselves out of that start and kind of just, you know, get some more wins out of it. But at the very least, we know what their home jerseys look like, and I love them. I forgot to mention that off top too. Their home jerseys are among the best in the league, as far as I'm concerned.
And I think their road jerseys are amongst the best in the league. They're as, like, you know, bright and illuminating as any, like, regular standard white road jersey. Like, they look really, really good. I mean, they're trying to force the Vancouver rivalry, I think, down our throats a little bit. Do you think it's, you know, does it feel real? Do you think it's going to be real, or is it just sort of the same old thing where it's, they're gonna have to meet in the postseason, or someone's gonna have to send an offer sheet one way and someone's gonna have to steal a player? Like, that's, we're going to get Carolina, Montreal territory.
Like, Montreal, Carolina.
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like a lot of these, I mean, the geographic rivalry thing makes sense. I thought it would have been a little bit more amplified, but in talking to people like Sam of Broadcast Podcast, like, you realize Canucks fans are essentially just dead inside and they don't really care about that stuff. But like, I think it's one of those things where you kind of need like the playoff matchups to go against each other. Like, remember Vancouver and Chicago's rivalry in the early 2010s? Like, that was something. You also have to think about, you need like another, like a big instance in a game where like someone takes a big hit and a big brawl emerges or something. Like, they need something to kind of amplify the rivalry beyond geography, because if you just have the, like, a border war or whatever, like, it's not going to be this big bad rivalry that everyone's going to get behind. Like, how many times do you see Detroit and Toronto play against each other and everyone's all like, oh man, we got to deal with the Detroit Red Wings? I mean, yes, they're very close to each other, but
proximity.
Proximity, but beyond that, like, we don't really feel that disdain for both of those teams. Yeah, well, we'll need something between Seattle and Vancouver to happen that will generate like an actual reason for both teams to hate each other beyond geography.
If Connor Garland continues to score game-winning goals and stare into the souls of fans behind the bench, maybe that'll help things along. But yeah, it's going to take some time, but you know, maybe those Seattle fans will help it along. I saw a lot of criticism for like the jerseys. People were wearing their own custom jerseys. I actually like that for an expansion team, because you like build a sense of community. Oh, there's that guy. You know, he has his name on it. You know that guy. You sort of like the same faces showing up at the game all the time. Like, that sort of helps bring that community atmosphere, which I think Vegas has absolutely nailed. So a lot of people are calling like jersey fouls if you don't have, you know, Yanni Gourde 37 on the back. You can get whatever jersey you want. Again, just, if you don't like something, just shut up.
Even if it has 69 on it?
I mean, I didn't see a 69. Those are all, if you make a sex joke on a jersey, it's probably foul. But anything else for me, go for it.
Yes, I just wanted to pose your question on
unless
that,
it says, you know, nice. If it says nice on the top,
yeah,
69, yeah, that's fine. That's okay. Any other 69 usage, you know, keep it in your own house, I guess.
You came here for sex jokes. Welcome to the Yahoo Sports Hockey Podcast.
There you go. And a perfect transition to the tire pump. Your chance to heap praise on someone. Julian, go for it.
Oh, wow. Yeah, really? That's such a great transition. Okay, I'll just say this before I properly go into the tire pump here. Like, you know, Seattle Kraken fans, do what you want. Enjoy it. The fact that you have this team, really awesome to see, really great to have happen. I'm with you on the fact that, you know what, there's no real jersey fouls. You could just be a fan and enjoy it. There's too many rules with that sort of stuff, man. But yeah, you know, I wasn't necessarily going to make them my tire pump fell. And I'm not going to. I'm actually going to make it Mike Bossy, the New York Islanders legend, who, as of recently, was working in media with TV Sports here in Quebec. He's had to step back from his duties with TV Sports because he's actually battling lung cancer. This is somebody who is recognized as one of the great NHL players of his time, one of the greatest scoring wingers to ever do it, and obviously a Stanley Cup champion as part of those dynasty New York Islanders teams. I wish him and his family nothing but the best, and I hope he's able to get himself back to full health. I don't know specifically how far the cancer has got through, but obviously anytime cancer is involved, it's a very brutal thing to go through, and it's just devastating. And I hope he's just able to battle through that. But yeah, I want to give a tire pump to Mike Bossy, a premier NHL legend who has to battle through this terrible disease. And I hope he's able to get through a full recovery.
One of the best goal scorers of all time. And I didn't know he was doing TV, but I mean, I hope he can continue one day to get back behind a mic. And, you know, because Alex Ovechkin's chasing down records, becoming the greatest goal scorer ever. Great to have his perspective. So all the best to the Bossy family. I got a couple, nothing that's truly pump worthy. So I'll spread the wealth a little bit. Vince Dunn scoring the first goal ever at Climate Pledge Arena. Very, very cool. We saw, like, you know, and obviously it was an awesome reaction to it, but I like how in Seattle, the fans like seem to really be over top of the ice. And that was really evident when he scored that goal. It was very cool scenes there in Seattle. So Vince Dunn, he'll be part of a trivia answer someday with that goal. Maple Leafs fans for being angry. I'll give them that. I mean, there's reason to put pressure on this team and this organization. And I think we're going to see that more and more. So shout out to them for doing their job because the team's not doing its. And the TNT crew, they had a very good, and one that certainly everyone should watch segment on Jimmy Hayes and just, you know, talking about it, right? Talking about what he went through and what a lot of NHL players and a lot of athletes go through, which is troubles with addiction and painkillers. And they had a real segment. We talked about how much fun they had. Well, they can have fun and they can be real at the same time. I think Liam McHugh is doing a tremendous job there. And Paul Bissonnette talking about his experience with Jimmy and how good of a guy he was, giving the humanizing aspect of it. And Wayne Gretzky talking about, you know, the what he's seen in his career as well. These guys talking about important things in addition to having fun, that makes for a broadcast worth watching. So shout out to them for tackling that subject.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm still really sad about the Jimmy Hayes death. I mean, I'm not going to act as if I was the biggest fan of him as a player and know all the stats and stuff, but just to kind of hear him passing so suddenly as he did and to see the NHL community get around him has been a really, you know, pleasant thing to see. But it is just unfortunate that it had to come off of a loss of his. So, I'll check out the TNT story. I actually did not get a chance to watch it. So, yeah, it's the problem of addiction is just, it's obviously a problem. And any opportunity people can shine a light on that to, you know, try to help other people get out of that is something worthwhile.
Yeah, he's clearly someone who touched the hockey world, and this is an issue that, you know, contributed to his life ending that has touched the hockey world and continues to touch the hockey world. And we need to continue talking about it in order to keep this game in the best position and healthiest position and have everyone's lives protected as much as possible. Julian, we'll leave it there. Another Sunday edition of the Yahoo Sports Podcast in the books.
Yeah, we did the damn thing yet again, and we will continue to do the damn thing yet again, whether on this podcast or on Zone Time. I wonder when you'll be back on Zone.
I am back this week, and I'm going to put my AirPods in the case right now, charged, ready to go, so I don't have to tear apart couch cushions looking for these stray things. We talked about Leicester City, you know, with the odds them to win the Premier League a couple years ago. The odds that I've owned these for more than 2 years, I think exceed those odds, because I am the most, I lose everything. And these things, just as they are designed, are impossible to keep in a place where you expect them to be.
Oh man, I just got these new like Beats ones, and I actually, thanks for reminding me, I have to charge my actual case actually. So yeah, looks like we both have to do some upkeep with our earbuds, I guess. Yeah. We also don't have sponsors for that, so that wasn't even us trying to plug brands. We just have earbuds.
Our first world problems are losing our earbuds and not getting sponsorships from sparkling water companies, which will never be named.
Hey,
again.
Hey, we don't like what you did, unnamed company. Y'all left us hanging. We don't like that.
All right, man. Until next time.
Good. Drink this bottled water instead. See you, dude.
Yeah, man. See ya.
Peace.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.